This is the Late Round Podcast with your host, JJ Zacharisa.
What's up, everyone? It's JJ Zacharisa, the editor-in-chief over at NumberFire.com, and this is episode 129 of the Late Round Podcast, one of the many shows that are part of the NumberFire Podcast Network. Thanks for tuning in. You guys generally know my stance on rankings and projections at this point. It's not that I hate them, I just think the fantasy football world often gets too tied to them. People rely too heavily on them. For a game with a decent amount of variance and unpredictability, being locked into the way players are ranked can often get you into trouble. You're not able to embrace and understand variance as well. Now, as an analyst, I still do projections each year. I go through the process of building them out after the NFL draft each season, and I get some end result, a fantasy point output for each relevant player. But to be real with you guys, I'm not doing this so that I can have a simplistic rankings list to take to each of my fantasy football drafts. I'm not creating projections to make my draft experience that basic because I don't think fantasy football is that basic. Or at least, I think there are a lot of small edges that you can find in order to optimize your chance of winning in fantasy football. Really, I just create projections to learn. Going through the exercise of making projections allows you to become a better fantasy football player. It's not different than how you learn things in a high school or college class. You could memorize the information and maybe you do well on a test as a result, but everything comes a lot more naturally if you sit back and learn what goes into those answers, why those answers are the way they are. Now, I understand that not everyone can just go and build out fantasy football projections. You guys all have jobs, families, friends, other hobbies. It's very easy for me to say, hey, go project players and become a better fantasy player. But it's not that simple. The reason my job exists is so that I can make things easier for you on your path to fantasy football championships. I'm supposed to teach. I'm able to spend a lot more time on this stuff than you guys are, and my job is to take that research and make it consumable and enjoyable. And yes, I've often questioned, what am I doing with my life? Because that is my job. But that's what I intend on doing today. I want to take the research that I found from my projections and make it consumable and enjoyable. Since I know a lot of you physically can't go through the process of building projections, I figured I'd share some of my learnings through doing this year's set. Rather than just give you the final answers for you to memorize, which to be fair, I understand a lot of you probably just want that, let's look at why the answers are the way they are. Let's look at some low-key interesting insights that I gathered through doing projections for the 2018 season. Now, I did tweet a couple of these insights when my projections were first finished, so if you follow me on Twitter, my handle is @LateRoundQB, by the way, you may see some redundancy from those tweets in today's podcast. One of the ones that I did tweet, though, was that Randall Cobb seems vastly underrated right now in early fantasy football drafts. Let's look at his situation. His competition for targets right now in that offense include Devontae Adams, Jimmy Graham, and just a slew of players who have very little experience in the NFL. You've got three rookie wide receivers and Geronimo Allison, essentially. And that's all been freed up because Jordy Nelson is gone. Nelson saw roughly 16% of Green Bay's targets last year, but we also know that Green Bay didn't have Aaron Rodgers for the majority of the season. Over Jordy's last three full seasons in Green Bay with Aaron Rodgers, he'd seen at least 22.3% of the Packers' targets. He's been heavily involved in that offense. That's now gone, and the biggest replacement is Jimmy Graham, who won't demand nearly that high of a market share. Graham hasn't seen more than about 17% of his team's targets since 2014. I think a lot of you are probably questioning Cobb himself as a producer, and I get that. He really hasn't been ultra-relevant in fantasy football over the last three seasons, basically since 2014. But keep in mind that he still saw 129 targets in 2015 while finishing as a fringe wide receiver too. And Aaron Rodgers wasn't exactly himself that season. He threw about a percentage point lower than his usual touchdown rate with a career low in yards per target. That was partially because he had no true number one receiver with Jordy Nelson out. Then in 2016, Randall Cobb dealt with injuries. And then last year, Cobb saw nine or more targets in three of the five games that he played with Aaron Rodgers. In the five games that he played with Rodgers, he finished ranked 11th, 27th, 35th, 21st, and 8th in weekly PPR scoring at wide receiver. Those are easy wide receiver two numbers. Cobb may not score a ton of touchdowns given Graham's presence and Devontae Adams being their true top receiver, but he's slotted to be second on an Aaron Rodgers-led team in targets, and according to fantasyfootballcalculator.com, he's being drafted behind freaking Kelvin Benjamin. He could be a huge value this year. The 49ers didn't draft a running back in this year's draft, and that means that they're entering the year with Jerick McKinnon as the starter and Matt Breida, Joe Williams, and Jeremy McNichols behind him. For an offense that could be decent this season, given Jimmy Garoppolo will be under center all season long, that's a backfield that's full of questionable pieces. Now, don't get me wrong, I like McKinnon and think that he's a really solid RB2 this year. But there are two things at play that was pretty evident through doing these projections. First, we have to wonder how big of a workload McKinnon can actually carry. He's never seen more than 159 carries in a single NFL season, though he did have one college year with almost 270 carries. Regardless, if you move forward with the very fair assumption that McKinnon probably can't and won't manage 60%+ of San Francisco's attempts on the ground, then that leaves some room for a second running back to have interesting appeal if he emerges, if that second running back comes through. Because not only could he see some work naturally in that offense, but if McKinnon gets hurt or if McKinnon fails to live up to his contract, that second back all of a sudden becomes pretty valuable. So this isn't so much me telling you to get Matt Breida or Joe Williams. Rather, keep an eye out on that number two job throughout the offseason because there could be some work to be had in that backfield. AJ Green took a step back last season, hitting career lows in yards per reception, yards per game, and catch rate. Things just were not great in Cincinnati. The good news, though, is that he still saw over 28% of Cincinnati's targets. His target share wasn't that far off from its peak. And if he keeps up that target share, good things in the volume department should come, because last season, Cincinnati ran fewer than 58 plays per game. They only ran 927 plays on the season, which was fourth lowest since the year 2011. Of the three teams to run fewer plays than the Bengals, so the 2016 Dolphins, the 2014 Titans, and the 2015 Rams, the average increase in plays run the following year has been about 60, or nearly four more plays per game. That means Andy Dalton should throw more passes this year after failing to reach 500 attempts for just the second time in his career, and if Green keeps up that target share, his volume should increase by double digits. And then if we see an increase in efficiency too, Green should be absolutely fine. He ended up sixth in my projections, right ahead of Devontae Adams and Keenan Allen, and right below Michael Thomas and DeAndre Hopkins. I'd have no problem taking AJ Green in the second round this year. I feel like I should have started out with this, to be honest, but at a high level, everything is just deeper this season. I can't remember a year where the first two rounds of fantasy drafts were just so solid. Just to give you an idea of what I mean, I've got 17 running backs projected to hit 200 fantasy points this season, so PPR points, while 11 are projected to get 250 PPR points. Last season, those numbers were 13 and 7, so you're looking at 4 or 5 more relevant top-notch fantasy football running backs. Now, obviously, injuries will happen, but so will backs emerging from crowded backfields. You can't just assume that number of relevant backs from a projection standpoint will decrease because of injuries. And wide receiver is stronger too, especially with someone like Odell Beckham back and healthy. And then there's quarterback that's just, why in the world would you take a quarterback early this season? I did a mock draft for NFL.com last week, and I ended up getting Drew Brees in round 15. Drew Brees was a 15th round quarterback. You're looking at least 20 quarterbacks that will be viable as your starter in fantasy football. So in single quarterback leagues, drafting one late is absolutely the way to go. It's not even close. Don't get cute during your draft. One of the hardest position groups to project is Jacksonville wide receivers. There are just so many of them. You've got Marquise Lee, Dede Westbrook, Dante Moncrief, Keelan Cole. They just drafted DJ Chark. And then there's also Austin Seferian Jenkins there now too. It's a mess. It's an absolute disaster. All the while, you've got a run-heavy team that will more than likely regress a bit in the plays run department this year. The Jags were basically the opposite of the Bengals last year in terms of the amount of plays they ran per game. They came in at over 67. That was the most in the league, but it was oddly the 31st most since 2011. Even still, of the 30 teams who have run the same or more plays than Jacksonville did last season, so this goes back to 2011, only six of them ended up running more offensive plays the following year, and two of those teams ran fewer than 10 more offensive plays. Essentially, what I'm getting at here is that the Jags will probably run fewer plays, and if they hover the same pass-to-run distribution, then there could be fewer overall passes for Blake Bortles. And when you're splitting that pie up between so many pass catchers, it makes each of them really hard to project and trust. Marquise Lee is probably the only dude in that passing attack that I'd really consider drafting at this point, but we've got months to see how the depth chart shakes out. The Saints are another team that had odd tendencies in 2017, but theirs was odd only because of how they've historically been run. Last year, New Orleans had a 1.21 pass attempt to rush attempt ratio. That was a below average mark across the league. We know New Orleans has not been that run heavy of a team under Sean Payton. In fact, in the 4 years prior to last season, the Saints never ranked lower than sixth in pass to run ratio. And the lowest that ratio was during that 4 year stretch was 1.62. Again, last season it was 1.21. It was a pretty drastic shift, and then on top of that, Drew Brees finished the 2017 season with his lowest touchdown rate in about 10 years. I don't expect the Saints to revert all the way back to their pass-heavy days, but I do think that we're going to see a team that's slightly more pass-heavy this season. We have far more data of them being pass-first than we do run-first. The Saints were also one of four teams last year to have as many rushing touchdowns as passing touchdowns. Again, personnel tells us that the Saints may continue to find the end zone on the ground, but this is still something, especially paired with Breeze's touchdown rate, that will regress a bit. What that means is that I'm probably a little higher on the Saints' passing attack than most, specifically Drew Brees, Michael Thomas, and Alvin Kamara, and perhaps a little lower on someone like Mark Ingram, suspension aside. There were three number two, and I'm currently doing air quotes while I say number two, wide receivers who came out looking good from a projection standpoint, or at least a lot better than where consensus sees them. The first is Kenny Stills. Now, Devontae Parker also doesn't look all that bad in the projections, but Parker is going in the eighth round of fantasy football drafts, according to fantasyfootballcalculator.com, while Kenny Stills is completely undrafted. And I find that interesting when Stills finished last season with over 100 targets and a target share of 17.4%, and now Jarvis Landry is gone, and while I'm not a Ryan Tannehill fan, the quarterback position is probably getting a boost with him under center. There really isn't a ton of competition for targets in the Miami offense, and the defense projects to be a not very good defense, which means Miami probably won't be able to just be some run-heavy team, even if they hypothetically want to be one. And Stills is only 26 years old, you guys. He's less than a year older than Devontae Parker. And then there's also Rishard Matthews. Now, I get the allure with Corey Davis. I loved Corey Davis coming out, and he's a very real breakout candidate this season. Injuries derailed his rookie season, but he sort of had a nice coming out party against New England in the playoffs. But again, we have to always remember that variance exists. While we can recognize Corey Davis's upside, and that's great to factor into your evaluation of him, we've got to also recognize that he may not take as big of a target share as we might want him to, and that he still may not be ready to take that next step. So enter Rishard Matthews, who's been really solid in Tennessee despite no one caring. For some reason, no one cares about Rishard Matthews. He's seen at least 17.5% of Tennessee's targets in each of the last two seasons, and he only played 14 games last year, so that number should actually be higher. And he's also accounted for at least 28% of Tennessee's receiving touchdowns over this time. In each of the last 2 years, he had at least 28% of Tennessee's passing touchdowns. To give you guys some context around what that means, over the last 2 years, Rishard Matthews owns two of the top 29 wide receiver seasons in touchdown share. Would it surprise any of you if he ends up coming close to Corey Davis in fantasy points scored? Or would it even surprise you if he outscored Corey Davis? I don't think that's the probable outcome per se, but the fact that there's a 7-round gap between the two players and we can realistically ask those questions tells us that Rishard Matthews is probably undervalued. And then there's also Tyler Lockett. Now, Lockett's disappointed if you've had any expectation for him in fantasy over the years. Don't forget that he was a popular breakout candidate a couple of years ago too. But really, there's no number two wideout in Seattle right now. There are zero bodies in that offense. And even though the team does want to run a lot, I do question their ability to do so, not just because of some offensive line issues, but because that defense isn't what it used to be. Their game scripts may not be that favorable. So right now with Lockett, you're getting a number two receiver with one of the best quarterbacks in football. I guess in this grouping, I should also mention the Colts' number two wide receiver, who looks to be Chester Rogers right now. But there's also a massive opening in that offense. And realistically, guys, I actually don't mind any of the six wide receivers from the three teams that I mentioned. I think Parker, Stills, Corey Davis, Matthews, Baldwin, and Lockett are all pretty strong picks this year. But if you want guys who will be super late, look at the secondary players in those offenses for cheap production. That's the last note for today's show, though. Thanks to everyone for listening. If you've yet to subscribe to the Late Round Podcast, make sure you are by searching for it on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, SoundCloud, and TuneIn. And as always, when you're on iTunes, if you could leave me a rating and review, it'd be greatly appreciated. And if you're not following me on Twitter, I'm on there at LateRoundQB. If you've got a mailbag question for me this week, feel free to hit me up with a tweet or email me at jj@numberfire.com. Thanks, everyone. I'll talk to you later in the week.